WMMC HD3 Detroit, KMPS HD3 Seattle, WBMX HD3 Boston,
and on AOL Radio
and Yahoo Launchcast.
CBS Radio's The New Sky.
Enlightened philosophers tell us that we are divine beings in human form. Let's get real here. How can we live a busy life with a job, kids, and a mortgage and still be spiritual? Join CJ Liu as she tackles real life issues through a spiritual lens and talks with experts in relationships, work, and more. You'll get practical life skills and learn how to touch, feel, and experience a whole new way of living. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on fireitupwithcj.com and call CJ now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
Live from the headquarters of CBS Sky Radio, it's Fire It Up with CJ, now at www.fireitupwithcj.com. For the next 4 weeks, we'll be exploring hope and why it is so critical to not only our own mental and physical well-being, but also the planet's future. Let's go to CJ. Hi there, CJ. How are you doing?
Hey, great. Hey, welcome everyone to the Fire It Up with CJ show. I'm all refreshed after being on vacation, and I have a fantastic show today. I have photographer and filmmaker Roger Resmeyer, who I'm thrilled to talk to. So welcome, Roger.
It's wonderful to be here, and thank you. You have such a great show.
Thank you. I'm honored
to be on it.
Thank you. So in 1967, at age 13, you're given, I would describe it as a death sentence. I know that's kind of harsh, but a death sentence. You're given 20 years to live, and the last five of which may be filled with blindness, amputation, and kidney failure. I can't imagine being a 13-year-old and kind of facing that future. And so we're going to start off the show by talking about your personal transformation. How have you become this wonderful person that you are from that? I can only imagine. I mean, especially at age 13. So when you look, when you look at the trajectory of your life and you think, you know, you had described in one of your videos that you're filled with fear and depression and pessimism and who knows what else, especially given this death sentence. What were the things that kind of turned it around?
Well, you know, at 13, I was told I had type 1 diabetes, and at that time, there was very little medical technology to control it properly. They would give you one shot a day of insulin, and you couldn't measure your blood sugar, and blood sugars, when they fluctuate wildly, can lead to very, very unpleasant effects, including blackouts and personality changes if the blood sugar gets too low and so forth. So I was really two people. I was a sweet young minister's son who was, you know, happy, and then I would turn into a little bit of a veg. And sometimes if I was upset with my parents or whatever, I would go into a rage.
Yeah.
So it was a rough life. And everybody in the 1960s, I'm 59 now, was told if they had diabetes, was told that statistically they had 20 years and the last 5 years would be pretty bad, that your body would fall apart. So I threw myself at the world.
Yeah. Were you like, whatever, I'm just going to go for it, and reckless abandonment? Was it kind of that kind of energy?
Well, no, I mean, the immediate thing was a depression, and I went into myself, and I was so negative about myself that I didn't want to talk about myself to anybody. And my parents made a mistake. They let me keep it secret from my classmates. So I picked up the camera, and the camera was really my healing mechanism, because I could put the camera between me and people. I had an immense amount of empathy. I was a very good people photographer just by nature. And with the camera, I could feel important and feel wanted, but I didn't have to talk about myself.
Interesting.
So the camera...
So you could kind of portray what was happening, your visions, what your perception of life was.
So in a way, the camera was my healing mechanism, and it helped lift me out of it. But I certainly had some horrific experiences, some dreadfully low blood sugars where I almost died. But it's, you know, now I have to say diabetes is the best thing that ever happened to me.
Okay. That's surprising. How did it become the best thing that ever happened to you?
Well, it triggered a series of life events that has led for me to have experiences that I never in a million years would have had. It's shaped my worldview. It's driven everything that I've done, and it's resulted in this project that I'm working on now, which is the culmination of everything I've ever thought about, wanted to do, and cared about.
Okay, so let's just break that all down, because I find that all fascinating. So it shaped your worldview. Okay, so tell us how it shaped your worldview. And then how it kind of led to kind of where you are right now.
Well, you know, I was a minister's son, and I had 27 blood relatives who were Lutheran ministers, including my dad, my grandparents, all my uncles but one.
Yeah.
I was supposed to be a minister. And this was such a profound, had such a profound impact on me that it cracked me out of that world. And, you know, I was lucky to go to Yale University.
Right.
And ran into a professor there who is a little bit unusual, quite a character, but he had some theories about the evolution of consciousness, that mm-hmm. humanity is evolving.
So were you studying in religion in Yale too, or
I was
were you just looking, taking some classes?
No, I got a BS, a Bachelor's of Science in Psychology in the end at Yale. I got in on an astronomy program, but
yeah.
But I was studying evolution of consciousness growth,
wow.
Consciousness experience. Tavistock was a form of group dynamics that we were studying. And I met this professor who became a mentor and who introduced me to some celebrities. And I ended up in San Francisco
mm-hmm.
right after graduating from Yale. And walked into the rock scene there as a photographer
mm-hmm.
who didn't even realize I was a photographer. And the leading rock photographer in San Francisco, bless his soul, had just been busted for being a cocaine dealer.
Yeah.
And I walked into that world, and all of a sudden, the biggest rock bands in the world, the ones that I cared about the most, Jefferson Starship in particular, Grace Slick and Paul Kantner,
yeah.
Hired me on. And
wow.
and I walked into that vacuum of this great photographer's experience and became a photographer, just swept off my feet and thrown into that world.
I wonder if it's because you could really see them, you know, at an emotional level, because you had gone through your own dark periods where you kind of
yeah.
Got the depths of your soul. So that I wonder when you were taking pictures of them, if what they knew was that you could see them. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. I mean, I'm for one thing, I'm a little bit unusual in that I'm a right brain, left brain male. I'm sort of yin yang. I'm very mm-hmm. highly sensitive, highly creative, but also steely logical.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not all that common, and it's not really all that well understood. I mean, sometimes people get confused about which side of the brain I'm coming from.
Right.
It does mean that I have an empathy. And
right.
a minister's son empathy, where I could be a chameleon. I could be with a scientist one day, and I could be with a rock star the next day,
right.
and I could be with somebody who was dying of AIDS. I did the first AIDS stories for Life and Time magazines
yeah.
the next day, and I fit in with everybody.
Yeah, interesting. So it was really that kind of empathy that allowed you to capture something special about them. So, okay, so fast forward to now. How are all these pieces, your photographing space, you're photographing these phenomenal occurrences, meeting these phenomenal scientists, and now tell us how you've arrived at your current work. Like when you look at the stuff, you know, if we all have a destiny and a purpose and kind of the universe is leading us to this path, what was yours?
Well, I certainly feel like my life has been led. And I certainly feel like there's a lot, there was some background noise.
Yeah.
I certainly feel like there's been a lot, that has come to me that I certainly didn't deserve. I mean, I feel like I'm a channel. There's nothing about me that's special, but I did have a unique set of circumstances that shaped my worldview that opened me up to trying things that a minister's son normally wouldn't have done.
Right.
And, I've had over 30 near-death experiences.
Wow.
And some of them came from severe insulin shock, where I mm-hmm. came out of it much younger. It doesn't happen now, but much younger I came out of shock.
You've been reincarnated 30 times.
Had to do with insulin shock. Some of them had to do with those first years when I thought my life was going to be short, and I just threw myself at picture taking and took risks that no photographer should have taken.
Physical risks.
Physical risks.
Hanging off of something.
Hanging out of helicopters, diving next to lava, you know, putting myself in the path of laser beams, where if a single dust particle had drifted into the beam, it could have blinded me, and having
right.
to taking the glasses off to focus. I mean, it's just, you know, hanging from the mast of a America's Cup sailboat and getting stuck on, in a, and almost falling from the top of the mast. I mean, it's just endless.
Right.
Someday, if anybody cares, I'll write it down.
I think it's like, okay, so you kind of said that your life has been led. So how do you feel like, okay, these experiences, you know, your psychology, astrology major in Yale, you took these photographs of these incredible celebrities. You then went and took pictures for National Geographic. How does that lead to where you are right now?
Well, I did stories. I mean, I started as a celebrity photographer, doing rock and roll and doing book covers for people like Shirley MacLaine and Danielle Steele and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But I ended up doing what I loved the most as a kid, which was science stories for National Geographic. And I kept running into scientists in the 1980s and 1990s who had answers to the world's biggest problems. And these guys were different. And they were mostly male and they were mostly old men. There were some women and there were some younger ones, but these people were completely different because they had lines, age lines in their face that were childlike. They were lines of joy and happiness. And I suddenly realized that, these people who had seen answers were completely on a different plane than the rest of us.
Yeah, they didn't have worry, you know, those kind of like two lines in between your forehead or that kind of sad, like, oh, the world is over. They had looks of innocence, happiness, joy. Interesting.
And so I started exploring this and talking to these people more about what made them that way. And what I learned was that there were answers to the world's biggest problems. These guys didn't have publicists. And I'm not saying that people aren't doing things about the world's problems. There's tons being done about the world's problems. But I don't think we all realize it. And I don't think that the message gets out because of the way our media is shaped. And our media is shaped by our society and our culture. It's not, it's nobody's fault, but, you know, we're not seeing the positive picture that I've come to see.
And so your question was why, or how to change this? Like, what was the thing that, given my set of experiences,
I came up with an idea after doing a story on energy and nuclear power in 1990 for National Geographic. I came up with an idea for a book called Visions of Tomorrow. And I put it on the back burner, and now it has to be a film because coffee table books aren't very successful anymore.
Oh, God. That's incredible.
So, you know, I'm working on a documentary film. I have a foundation called the Visions of Tomorrow Foundation, and the first project of the foundation is a film called Visions of Tomorrow. And it's solutions to the world's problems and a call to action for all of us to help empower that by changing the way we see it.
So it's taking the people that you've met in real life and saying, hey, there are these solutions. People just need to know. I mean, these guys just didn't have any publicity. So it's, the hypothesis is that it's publicity. If they had publicity, then people would know about these things. They'd invest in them, but they're just scientists sitting in their rooms doing cool things with nice childlike faces.
Yeah. I mean, it's gone a lot beyond that in the last 23 years since I had the idea. I mean, there's tons of work being done. I mean, the Gates Foundation and other organizations are so involved in trying to fix the world. It's just that our attitude is holding it back.
Right.
Because even when we see these things going on, we forget that the world is really a good place.
Right.
And it's not so bad as our insidious media brainwashing that we don't even realize is happening to us, you know, has really pushed us down.
And
people turn inward and they fill themselves with fear and they become concerned about the future and then they disempower themselves and they disempower the world.
Are you the best person for leading into our next segment? I couldn't imagine anything better. So Roger Rosmeyer, a renowned photographer, filmmaker, and speaker up on next on Fired Up with CJ. We're going to be talking about photojournalism and how we can be more conscious consumers of the media that's out there. And, you know, how has media shaped us? How is it holding us back? And in what way does it, you know, do some of the things that you mentioned, which is make us go inward and feel more fear and kind of engender those kind of things. So we're going to be talking more about that and helping us become more conscious about the media. So folks, make sure to go to www.firedupwithcj.com if you want a good other great shows like this. We'll be right back.